The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
To the house!
This is unbelievable. Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Danny Cannell, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, and Tom Fornelli. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. It's Saturday night, about 11:27 p.m. on the East Coast as we get rocking and rolling here, putting week two to bed as the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina, after going to Lawrence and coming up with a straight-up win last season. Here they are again, and now they are just dominating. 12-7 with that result last year, 21-0 as we sit here and record. If there's any major updates, we will continue to offer our commentary and analysis. But there's considering the slate, there is a lot to get to, including thoughts on what we saw from conference championship and college football playoff contenders Clemson, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. We got to see, you know, we could reach all the way back into Thursday if we want, you know, what we saw from Miami. But I think that there's two big winners for this week. Number one, I mean, it is the GD Sun Belt, right? And then number two, it is what could have been if we had all offered our Moneyline sprinkles for this week. Because we made a grave error in not putting the Moneyline sprinkles on the locks. And correct me if I'm wrong, Barton, didn't you have Arkansas State? The claim was you were going to be Arkansas State as your sprinkle, right?
That would have been my sprinkle.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know if I get credit for it saying it, you know, when it wasn't on the pod, but yeah, that would have been my sprinkle.
Tom and I put it on CBS Sports HQ.
Yeah. With the way my week's going in the locks, I'd really like to get some, I would like credit for my Coastal Carolina.
Well, and listen, right now. Kansas can turn this thing around, right? Like we got to remember that one's not in the books yet. Mine was Louisiana. And so, yeah, like I kind of, and not in a gloating way at all, but I do kind of want to start with this wild, noon slate where we had both Louisiana, in my opinion, looking like a team that was just as physical, just as fast, and just as athletic as the Iowa State team that they were going up against. And then Arkansas State just hanging in there, just running trick plays, like figuring out ways to get by against Kansas State. And so, like, the Sun Belt being a storyline coming out of our limited week one maintains on into week two. So, Louisiana or Arkansas State, Iowa State goes down, Kansas State goes down, Big 12. I'm not going to draw any Big 12 storylines just yet, unless y'all want to go there. Which way do y'all want to take this?
I mean, I think there are three power conferences playing this fall, and Sun Belt has taken that one away from the Big 12. I think the Sun Belt is our new power three.
That's what happens when you've got a day like today. It's like, sorry, yeah. you get demoted. Sun Belt, you're the new team. Barton, what'd you make of it all?
I think the Sun Belt or the Big 12 to me. So I was talking about this in the 24/7 Slack today. I used to think the Big 12 is Oklahoma, maybe Texas and Oklahoma State this year, and then a bunch of middle class teams, like just this big collection of sort of mid-range, the middle class socioeconomic status.
Right.
And I've come to the realization that it's basically, it's the one percenters, which is Oklahoma, maybe Texas, maybe Oklahoma State this year. And then it's like everyone below the poverty line. It's just there's no middle class and they're all just not very good. And that was a bad look, man. This is a bad, bad look for the Big 12 today.
So, go ahead, Tom.
I do think we should protect against the, like, because I've always said in a regular season, I always feel like we shouldn't react too much to what we see on the opening weekend for anybody. And I think this year, especially, there's going to be some strange kind of outcomes. That said, Louisiana was just the much better team than Iowa State pretty much throughout the entire game. So it's like, I don't think we could chalk that one up to just fluky week, first game of the season type of things for either teams. And I would say that maybe with Arkansas State, they had a bit of an advantage of having already played a game while Kansas State's in their opener. But yeah, it's, you combine those two losses with like Kansas, which I guess Kansas losing to a Sun Belt team wouldn't really hurt the Big 12's reputation, because that's something I don't think anybody's going to be shocked by. But it's just, it's a rough start to the season for the Big 12, except for, like Barton said, the one percenters, Oklahoma and Texas.
Well, and as we sit here right now, and I don't know what the final's going to be, but Houston Baptist has given Texas Tech everything.
Get out of here. Oh my gosh. I hadn't even pulled up that scoreboard for a while. Yeah.
There was the tweet earlier this week from like Texas Tech, one of their transfers from Arizona, like a linebacker, I can't remember his name right now, has been with the program for what, like 10 days, and he was named the
Colin
starter.
Schooler.
Yeah, and it was like I tweeted like the little taking notes thing, because it's like, oh, okay, that's that's worth noting, because that's probably not a good sign for the Texas Tech defense. And yeah, it's proving to be true so far.
I will take issue with one thing you said, though, Tom. You said that Louisiana was clearly the better team than Iowa State. And like that game, what was really interesting, because when you look at the box score, it really, like, Louisiana didn't dominate the box score. It was just, it was three plays. It was a kick return touchdown. It was a punt return touchdown. It was a 78-yard touchdown pass. And if you take away those three plays, it's not like Iowa State looked good, but Iowa State was, you know, had more, like, and they, Iowa State turned the ball over a couple times. So, but they had more yards per play. They had, you know, they ran the ball. They got, you know, Breece Hall had over 100 yards rushing. It wasn't a terrible showing. It was just that Louisiana capitalized on some big plays. And so I don't know. Like, I think
Brock Purdy's stat line tells a lot.
Yeah. That was bad.
And
for sure.
The Cajuns had more yards per play than Iowa State did. It was 4.9 to 4.3. I think would you dominate if you look at the box score? No,
more
I think
yards. I would say more yards total. Yeah. So yeah,
dominant is like watching the game, the line play. Like Iowa State was getting pushed around quite a bit, especially in the trenches, and it was just that was one thing that kind of stood out to me while I was watching the game, because normally when we see like these group of five teams do this, like you said, they had those big plays that they always need to pull off those upsets. But normally it's like, you know, you see their skill players or their quarterback has a great game. You don't really see their offensive line pushing around the Power Five team's defensive line or vice versa. And I saw a lot of that while I was watching this game.
It is for me affirmation that Louisiana is like, yes, a very, very good team. Like, there's nothing that is fluky about the fact that this is like, they're not just the second best Sun Belt team, but, you know, they are a top 25 team. I mean, yes, that I'm saying that in the context of there only being 76 teams that are playing right now, but they are without a doubt, in my mind, one of the top third. So, you know, you get to reframe it a little bit that to fast forward ahead, if we are fortunate enough to be playing college football in a healthy way when the college football playoff selection committee starts to unveil their rankings, you got a road win against a Power Five team. Like, and you looked pretty good. You shut them out in the second half. I mean, did Billy Napier outcoach Matt Campbell there? Has Matt Campbell missed? Has he gotten like the superstar invincibility video game style, and it's all worn off? And now Billy Napier's the new hot coach to take this ride, because the way that second half played out, was wild to me because the box score might not show any kind of domination. Our eyes might tell us that we were surprised at how Louisiana looked compared to the expectations of a Sun Belt team going in to play Iowa State on the road. But I mean, did Billy Napier outcoach Matt Campbell?
I mean, yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I mean, his team, I thought his team was better prepared. I thought his, and he just, look, he was going to be a hot name anyways, and he was going to do well in the Sun Belt, and they were going to have another probably double digit win season. I don't know. I don't know about that because I guess only 10 games or whatever, but they were going to have another really good year, probably be in the Sun Belt championship game. And he was going to have, he was going to be one of the top names in the group of five. He was going to be one of the top available coaches or whatever. But this was like his one shot this year to like elevate his status from like, oh, look at that hot group of five coach to like, oh, if one of the blue blood jobs come open, this dude just went and beat the guy that everyone was talking about. Like Matt Campbell turned out Florida State last year.
Right.
Yep.
Right. That's the guy that Florida State wanted. And now, like, Billy Napier isn't just, oh, well, Mississippi State may want, like, Mississippi State's going to poke around at Billy Napier, or like, oh, Baylor is kind of interested in Billy Napier. It's like Billy Napier is going to be the first man up. You know, maybe Luke Fickell still got an edge on him, but like, Billy Napier is going to be the first man up. And that's a very small sliver he was able to sneak into to make that happen by beating an Iowa State team that's ranked in the top 25. And by the way, like, Iowa State, I don't know, they may be average, but Matt Campbell has this really weird, like he's defined in this very weird specific way. Like he's gonna win about eight games. He's gonna not be that good in the early going. He may lose or almost lose to a not very good team, and then he's gonna beat Oklahoma, or he's gonna beat Texas or whatever. So like they're still gonna beat somebody, but he got beat up on too by the next Matt Campbell.
I'm calling my shot right now.
Okay.
Billy Napier at this time next year will be the head coach of your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah, I think that's that'd probably be where the best bet is for sure.
Because
he played at Furman. Uh-huh. He's been an assistant at South Carolina State. He was an assistant at Clemson. It makes too much sense.
Billy Napier taking on Dabo. Oh boy, that is rich.
And it might be, and you know, like the other thing to think about too, I wonder, and I'm just thinking this in real time, but like you know, South Carolina in a non-COVID year is probably getting rid of Will Muschamp at 5-7. All right. In a COVID year, I don't know what that goes down to, but it's probably, they're probably much more forgiving. Like if, as long as he doesn't just go like 1-9 or 0-4, you know, they probably get, let him back. But I wonder if, let's say Billy Napier goes on to go 10-1 this year and wins the Sun Belt, I wonder if they're like, look, we got this guy sitting here in a year where we may be the only team that can take a swing at him. Like, congratulations on your four wins, but like, we got to go make a run at this guy.
And then Muschamp can go replace Miles at Kansas.
Doesn't he always need
now 28-0 Chanticleers?
Jeez!
Oh my God!
He needs a DC year though, right? Doesn't he? Doesn't he need to like go be the defensive coordinator like for Bama or something, just to be able probably. To like?
That's probably it.
Probably the Nick Saban rehab school for coaches.
That's exactly what it is. If Bama doesn't win a national championship, Pete Golding will take the heat. Much chance to DC next year, and then he's a head coach somewhere.
Okay, so because I had higher expectations for Louisiana, because I was more impressed in the win, Louisiana felt like it took the headline in this two-part Sun Belt storyline in the early part of the day. Arkansas State was down 9 starters for this game against Kansas State. And like, I just thought that Kansas State, you know, we got to see Deuce Vaughn. Thank you, Barton Simmons, for turning us on to Deuce Vaughn. Listeners of the Cover 3 podcast got to see him and got to see the legend begin as he scored his first career touchdown. But I really thought Kansas State was disjointed offensively, which, you know, disappointing if you had high hopes for Kansas State. I have a hard time, given what I saw from Arkansas State in our other data point, you know, shout out to one of the few teams that we've got two games under our belt, Arkansas State and I guess Army. The I don't know that Kansas State being disjointed offensively was a great credit or the cause being Arkansas State's defense. They hit a couple of trick plays. They hit a couple big plays. The wide receiver play for Arkansas State is maddening and phenomenal all at the same time.
Yes.
I mean, like the most ridiculous catches and then also so many wide open drops. So I guess the question is, you know, how do you take the temperature of this Arkansas State team and how much does it excite you to continue to track the Red Wolves going through the season?
Well, I think Jonathan Adams is playing his way to the NFL really quick.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he looked great. I think, I mean, that one, the K-State Arkansas State is the one where it's like, K-State kind of got their ass kicked. Like that was Arkansas State. Now, granted, they were able to play a week before. But their offensive line is physical. They got those big wide receivers. Their quarterback play, they can get the job done. But they beat up, like, K-State couldn't run the football. Like, that's supposed to be their identity. Like, Deuce Vaughn had a couple, like, nifty little runs, but, man, I mean, the 2.3 yards per carry was the Kansas State's run production. I think their leading rusher, like, rushed for, like, I don't know, 30-something yards, 40 yards or something.
Deuce had 47 yards.
47 yards, leading rusher. I just, you know, they just... And the other, like...
23 of those, like, are from the wild snap. Remember there was that one snap where Skylar Thompson got out there and the ball just, like, shot right behind him? But fair. Should all count for the team total.
But, that's fair for, the average. But it still doesn't change the fact that, like, no running backs, well. like had any yardage of note. I did, like, Skylar Thompson and his wide receivers, like, there were several moments during the game where... they had an opportunity to make big plays in the pass game, and whether it was a misplaced throw or whether it was a receiver that kind of should have made a difficult catch that he didn't, like, just wasn't there. And that could be his first week stuff. But I mean, Arkansas State, just to me, like, that was a game where they just sort of looked better. I mean, if they had lost that game, cause Kansas State kind of came back and took the lead there, I think that would have been a tough one to swallow for Arkansas State because it felt like they really controlled that game.
Yeah, Skylar Thompson, I mean, like you said, I hope it was first week jitters because that's somebody who, when I was doing just research during the offseason, it's like you looked underneath the surface on his numbers at some of, like, the peripherals, and it was like, oh, wow, this kid's actually, you know, he's performing better than you might have thought. And I had high hopes for him coming into the season. So he did not look very good on Saturday. I mean, he was 17 to 29 for 259 yards, had two touchdowns and the interception, but it was more that the throws he missed or just didn't make that were there that it's like, oh, especially in a 4-point loss, those loomed kind of large at the end there. But yeah, it's Arkansas State. I mean, the Sun Belt, we came in thinking, you know, App State and the Cajuns are clearly the best two teams in the conference, but I think Arkansas State, the way that they've looked through 2 weeks, this is a team that I think is going to be competing for, you know, at least a spot in the Sun Belt title game with those two all season long.
So, Texas, as we record right now, is just mollywhopping UTEP 59-3 right now, 1%ers. Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler, just, you know, didn't even have to put in much work. You know, they went up 31-0 in the first quarter. I did not buy the pay-per-view. So just, I will admit that at one point I was watching a Twitter highlight shared by an Oklahoma videographer who was just shooting the viewfinder on his camera. You know how you can just have the tiny, like, 3-inch screen that pops out from the camera. So I was watching that to see some Spencer Rattler highlights, but it continues a trend that we saw last year. Do y'all remember what the Big 12's bowl record was?
Wasn't it winless or was it like 1-something?
1-5.
Yeah.
And the takeaway that I had for myself was don't get the parody of the Big 12's middle class confused. Like, because it's intriguing doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
And so that continues as we don't know how to separate some of these teams from each other, but that doesn't mean that they are necessarily some of the best teams in college football. So
Hey, we're out here dogging the Big 12 and not even mentioning that West Virginia downed a whole bunch of starters, still kicked Eastern Kentucky's butt.
They did.
Right. Props to Eastern Kentucky for just like raising their hand and stepping in to just get spanked by a bunch of teams. I mean, they didn't have to do that, but they decided to.
You remember the Brooklyn Brawler from the old WWF days?
No.
That's Eastern Kentucky.
All right. So to take this on into sort of the next portion of this, I feel like we need to check in on Mike Norvell, right? Because it was the debut of Willie Taggart, and Danny Cannell mentioned this here on the podcast, that I think it was 24-3, a home loss to Virginia Tech, and the offense just was absolutely woeful, could not get anything going. And here we go again, James Blackman is the quarterback. The offense cannot do anything. I mean, it was painful to try and watch this Florida State offense operate, and it only became more of a struggle as the game got later. Like, Mike Norvell was supposed to reverse some of these trends that we saw under Willie Taggart. Like, it was going to be tough to be able to fix all of the offensive line play, but just there was just such a creeping familiar feeling from last season. Remember, like, they had those fourth quarter leads, three blown fourth quarter leads. It was Boise State, it was Virginia, it was Wake Forest. And in all those games where they blew those leads, it was a situation where you would just watch them in these crunch time moments where they just needed a first down to be able to keep the drive alive, to keep their lead. Or then they would fall behind and they just needed a first down to be able to stay in the game. And it was all of that all over the game, all over again. It was another blown fourth quarter lead, Georgia Tech 16, Florida State 13. Yo, Mike Norvell, how do you like connect with this locker room right now? How does Florida State get up from this? And how much are we and y'all adjusting your barometer for what even to expect from the Seminoles team in the ACC schedule?
I believe I erred in my belief that Mike Norvell was a good enough coach to just suddenly make that offensive line good and suddenly make James Blackman a good quarterback. Because, like, you're right. Watching that game, it was like there was no difference between that Florida State team today than any Florida State team we've seen in recent seasons. James Blackman was, I mean, a lot of it's not all on him, obviously, because the offensive line was bad and he was under a lot of pressure, but he's shown time and time again that whether he's under pressure or not, he still makes mistakes. He still misses throws. He was 23 of 43 for 198 yards. They could not run the ball. They only averaged 3.1 yards per carry. And even more worrisome to me was, like, you know, Tamorion Terry's dropping passes. Like, he dropped what would have been an easy touchdown had he just pulled it in on a corner route. He's dropping passes. There was just, it was a sloppy performance. And maybe, hopefully, it's just, if you're Florida State, you could look back on this in a couple weeks and say, okay, that was just first game of the year type of stuff. But man, if you're a Florida State fan, you've gone through the last few years, today did not make you feel any better about anything.
I thought the Chip, you even, I mentioned it in our Cover 3 text thread, and you even sort of cautioned taking Florida State because of the
Jeff Sims.
The Jeff Sims revenge element. So Jeff Sims was committed to Willie Taggart, Florida State. And he, when Mike Norvell got the job, they basically dropped him and went after Tate Rodemaker and Chuba Purdy. And instead, Jeff Sims flipped, decommitted, got dropped, however you want to phrase it, commits to Georgia Tech. And then he goes to Tallahassee with a Georgia Tech team that is 365 days removed from an option offense or whatever, however long it is. And he out-duels James Blackman.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked better. He had better numbers. Georgia Tech's offense was better. Now, he had two terrible interceptions.
Yes.
But aside from those horrible interceptions, he looked okay. And that's the quarterback that, like, could have been competing for a starting job with James Blackman at Florida State. So I just thought that was a really interesting storyline. The other thing I thought was, because when I did the depth chart deep dive, the depth chart kind of breakdowns around the country, one of the things that jumped out to me was Florida State's running backs. Like, we went from Devontae Freeman and Cam Akers and whatever, all these other first round draft picks. And then this running back room now that Florida State's got is LaDainian Webb and Jashaun Corbin, and, you know, kind of not these guys, not these first round type of guys that we've been seeing forever. And then you look up the end of this game, and it's LaDainian Webb, leading rusher, 13 carries, 39 yards. Travis Jordan came in with like 39 yards, like in the second half, to just like out of the quarterback position. Jashaun Corbin's their second leading rusher at the running back position with 18 yards on 6 carries. Like, what? Like, that's the best we can do with this offense. Maybe they really do miss those guys. Maybe, you know, but it's pretty startling to see this Florida State offense just be this bad.
How many?
They're still great at blocking kicks, though.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's ridiculous. How many ACC teams would trade their current starter for James Blackmon?
I mean, I don't think anyone would like. Well, I don't know. There's.
Let's start from the top here. All right. Clemson, not trading their starter. Notre Dame,
no.
Not trading their starter. Louisville, not trading their starter. North Carolina's not trading their starter. Miami's not trading their starter. Pittsburgh's not trading their starter. BC might.
I had BC. I've got two. I've got 2 to 3 on my initial scan, and BC was one of my 2 to 3.
NC State?
We'll see. We'll see next week.
Yeah, we got to see Devin Leary in action before, yeah. Like, maybe.
I don't think either Virginia schools are.
Nah.
No. Syracuse.
I mean, Syracuse might.
Tommy tries so hard, though.
What about Duke?
I liked what I saw from Chase Bryce.
Yeah, Chase Bryce is all right.
I thought Chase Bryce looked pretty good, too.
I can stop hating on the Clemson quarterback transfers.
I liked Sam Hartman. I thought he played okay against Clemson. I mean, it's a tough haul against
that defense. Yeah, you can't measure that. You would take Hartman over Blackmon, I think.
So BC might be the only one that would consider it, really.
Yeah, it was BC
Syracuse,
and NC State. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I'll keep some homerism to thinking that maybe Devin Leary's taking some steps. But again, we've got to be able to go see that. You mentioned the Jeff Sims. How about, so there were two ACC quarterbacks who were committed to Florida State and at one time during their recruitment, and one on Saturday, and neither of them play for Florida State. Sam Howell.
Oops.
Sorry. That's just the way it breaks sometimes. All right. Coming up on the other side, we'll take a look at our initial thoughts to some of the best teams in the country. Talking about Clemson, talk about Notre Dame, talk about Oklahoma, all that and more next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So, let's go to Notre Dame. 27-13 against Duke. The not necessarily the thumping that I think was projected by some. Tom, was that a lock?
Yeah, I had him -20.
How do you diagnose it? What's the post game? How does your Fighting Irish diagnosis change?
Not at all, really. I just think it was sloppy first game of the season type of stuff. It was, I mean, Kyren Williams looks like he's going to be the real deal. Awesome. He rushed for 112 yards, had two touchdowns. He also caught two passes for 93 yards. One of them was a 75-yarder, like on the first play of a drive that took him to a first and goal. And then Ian Book threw an interception at the goal line directly afterwards. But I felt like every mistake Notre Dame made was just kind of an execution first game of the year type stuff. Nothing that really scared you or made you think this is going to be a problem for them going forward. And then on the other side, I thought, like we mentioned earlier, I thought Chase Brice played pretty well. I mean, his overall numbers weren't great. He was 20 of 37. He had 259 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But, you know, he did some good stuff in the run game. He made some nice throws. It's just, you know, they're playing against a better team and they really had struggles in the red zone. Like they had two first and goal situations in the first half that both ended up with a field goal. And I think that, you know, in a 14-point game is going to loom large for him. But I just think overall, it was cold, it was rainy, it was windy, first game of the year. Notre Dame didn't look all that sharp. Ian Book especially didn't really look all that sharp. But I thought, you know, as far as play calling was concerned, you know, the big Thomas Rees, who Barton is dressed up as for Halloween right now as we're recording this. Tommy Rees, I thought he did a good job. Like I said, I think the problem with Notre Dame's offense was mostly execution, not really play calling. I thought he did some nice stuff. He kept, you know, Duke off balance, kept things moving. It looked good. Just, you know, got to finish. But I don't think there was anything alarming if I'm a Notre Dame fan from what I saw today.
So did you leave the game thinking that they can compete with Clemson for an ACC championship? No, neither.
But I didn't think they could before the game.
Yeah, I mean, I suspected that Clemson was a clear tier above, but I held out the possibility that either A, Notre Dame's defense would be so dominant that they would be able to compete with that kind of a team, or B, that I was underestimating sort of the next evolution of Notre Dame's offense. I think neither of those things are true. Notre Dame's defense, while very good, is still sort of this bend, don't break sort of unit. It's, you know, they gave up some good big plays, but then you get in the red zone, like they weren't budging. They're going to hold you to a field goal. Like they could give up a couple drives here and there, but ultimately, you know, good luck. And the offense, first of all, Ian Book, still Ian Book.
Yeah.
Like, you know, preach all you want about Ian Book's taking the next step and Dark Horse Heisman, and man, wait till you see Ian Book this year. He's Ian Book. He will always be Ian Book. He is Ian Book now. He'll be Ian Book tomorrow. He'll be Ian Book 5 years from now. He's Ian Book. And that's not a bad thing. Like, being Ian Book's pretty good, but it's not the same as the guys that are winning Heisman trophies, the guys that are winning national championships. So I think that's settled.
Ian Book has his like CDL three times over. He's a bus driver who has achieved all of the bonus bus driver safety certifications. He gets an extra $15 on every paycheck because of all of the extra certifications he has as being one of the best bus drivers in all of college football.
Yes.
Sam, yeah, let's have John work on a graphic of Tommy Rees driving a bus.
So Ian Book is the ultra certified bus driver, and Tommy Rees is fine. And I'll tell you this, what I was excited about is Kyren Williams is awesome. Mm-hmm. He was awesome. And so they've got a running back. And they've got a good offensive line and all that. And then Michael Mayer made a few plays at tight ends. And
Aiden that was Gronk.
Yep. That's encouraging. But the other element here to where I don't like that makes me believe that Notre Dame isn't going to be able to take like this next like playoff step is I didn't see a lot of perimeter like weapons. You know, they didn't have like the Chase Claypool or the Miles Boykin or Will Fuller, like they didn't have that guy. Maybe, and I don't know who it would be that would emerge later. Kevin Austin, I guess, is he still hurt? But until they get that guy, and I think that's what they like. Even though they have like even those guys even aren't even like don't even play like that when they're at Notre Dame. They went to the combine before we realized they're who that is. They're that guy. So I still think Notre Dame is missing that piece. And they still don't scare Clemson to me.
I will say, I said that Notre Dame fans don't have anything to worry about. There is one thing to worry about. Kyle Hamilton did leave the game with a sprained ankle. So that's something to keep an eye on, because if they lose him, I think that's a serious problem for their defense.
I'll say this too. Like, I thought defensively they're best up front. I thought their defensive line looked really good. Linebackers can make plays. Wusu Koromoa was awesome. Other than Kyle Hamilton, I didn't think a lot really flashed out of their secondary. Like, if so, again, it goes back to just like skill. Notre Dame's skill is still lacking, I think.
It was funny too, because Brian Kelly in the post game, at least what he did with Jack Collinsworth on NBC, it was a little bit of him acknowledging that his preference is for them just to run the damn ball behind the best offensive line in the country, because he was like, yeah, you know, there were some jitters out there in the first half, but you know, I thought Tommy did a good job. He realized what worked for us, and then we stuck to that in the second half. And I was like, okay. So, yeah, we're just going to, like, Kyron Williams, Chris Tyree, Kyron Williams, Chris Tyree. Like, we got this deep backfield. Why would we ever – like, Notre Dame's offense in 2020 right now is that very reductive. What is it? There's three things can happen when you pass the ball. Two of them are bad. There's two things that can happen when you run the ball. Only one of them is bad type scenario. Like, they're just like, nah, we can win football games with Dalen Hayes, Owusu Koromoa. Like, the defense is so good that we can just run the ball behind this offensive line, and they're going to be able to beat everybody on their schedule not named Clemson. And that's a successful Notre Dame football season.
And you just can't line up head to head and beat Clemson. But like, Notre Dame and they don't have many of these games this year. You know, like, no, maybe Clemson's the only game where they actually, you know, are going to play someone where they have to answer some of these questions that I just brought up. But against Clemson, you know, like, Notre Dame might have enough pieces on defense, might have a good enough offensive line. Kyron Williams might be good enough back where you can just sort of piece together a game plan that gives you a chance to win a game like that. But I think that's the frustration with Notre Dame. Like, they've already faced Clemson in that scenario, and Clemson won the middle eight, and that's ball game, right? And so I think that they're tired of having to tightrope that deal, and they want to at some point just be able to line up and go toe-to-toe with athletes, and they're still not there.
All right, let's go to the Tigers next. The touchdown drought against Wake Forest, or the touchdown drought for Wake Forest against Clemson, is over. We shot off fireworks. We had confetti cannons for the first time since the 2017 game between Clemson and Wake Forest. The Demon Deacons found pay dirt, but they found it in garbage time as they put up 10 points in the fourth quarter in a 37-13 loss. The backdoor cover is awfully painful for everybody. Heavy public favorite that was the Clemson Tigers, and certainly a Clemson team that we were rooting for on the Cover 3 podcast. But I came away from this one with an interesting twist in the storyline around Trevor Lawrence, because he doesn't have T. Higgins and he doesn't have a Justin Ross. There isn't those overwhelming, surefire receivers. Like, Frank Ladson had a couple grabs. I think Joseph Nagata had a catch in this game. But the leading receivers are senior slot Amari Rodgers and junior tight end Braden Galloway. Like, he is just having to distribute the ball, make some sound decisions, and he ends up doing it to the tune of 351 yards passing on 78% completion percentage. I mean, he was just being an effective quarterback. He was being that kind of, like, he was being the kind of NFL robot that the NFL scouts are going to go crazy for, and it was strong enough. I think other headlines, of course, include Miles Murphy, who I think maybe not necessarily officially a starter. He was listed as a backup, but he certainly played starters minutes in this game. Brian Pressey, both of them had sacks, and Miles Murphy ended up leading the team in tackles in this game. The freshman movement is real. When Dabo says this is the most talented team that he's ever had, you are absolutely seeing it from game one.
And so, yeah, in like a weird season where we've got 10-game conference schedules and games getting delayed and players getting scratched and three COVID tests a week, like a little bit of what we expect about college football is that Clemson is just running the show right now in the ACC. So I don't know about y'all. I sort of came out of this one feeling like I was just checking boxes for Clemson and not really dissuaded at all from the belief that they are college football playoff bound.
Yeah, like remember last year, every week when we would record this show, we would spend 30 seconds talking about Clemson because it was simply just, yep, Clemson's still good, much better than everybody in the ACC. I have a feeling that we're going to be doing a lot of those kind of Clemson recaps again this year, because that's exactly how I felt watching Clemson play today. It was, yep, they're still a whole hell of a lot better than everybody else in the ACC. Can't really figure anything out until we get to the playoff and see them there.
Yeah, there was this lot of week one sloppiness in college football throughout the day, and that's fine. I'll take it. I'll take sloppy football. Like, we got it. College football is here, and I enjoyed it. And then the Clemson game came, and Trevor Lawrence trotted out there, and man, like, it was just so clean and smooth and like. It was just crisp, and like, it was just like, oh yeah, like this, it can look like this. And so it was just fun to watch a good ball, fun to watch a good player. Like, you get like first throw. I feel it was like first drive of the game. I want to say maybe it was just the first drive I watched. I might've missed a drive. He threw a corner route. I want to say it was just to like Frank Ladson. And, you know, I just got done watching, like, you know, Tamori and Terry drop up James Blackman throw, you know, game earlier, and like just all these like ridiculous like nonsense plays, and then like, this one's just, oh bam, like, all right, drop back, roll, like hit a little dart like 35 yards down the field opposite hash, and like all good, all right, let's roll. So I enjoyed that, I appreciated that, and yes, Clemson is going to be in the playoffs.
I think the greatest example is that all day long, going along with what you were saying, Barton, where it's like sloppy football everywhere, and then Clemson shows up and it's just clinical, it's perfect. We saw horrible special teams play across the country all day long, whether it was in coverage units, whether it was in the kicking game. You know, like I mentioned, Florida State blocked three kicks. There was muffed punts by the punter just dropping the ball in the end zone in the Citadel South Florida game. And then here comes Clemson with B.T. Potter making all four of his extra points and all three of his field goals, including a 52-yarder before half, which he just drilled, and there was never
even good for like 60.
Right down the middle. And it's like, man, they are just better than everybody at everything.
Stupid. Staying in the ACC, North Carolina, 31-6 winners against Syracuse. We mentioned Tommy DeVito earlier. That Syracuse team is, I'll say this, they, and you know, we were circling them as a team where motivations might be questioned. I will say I saw some fight. I saw an orange team that did not appear entirely checked out, but offensively they are just so bad. Like the Homer storylines coming out of like the North Carolina beat writers and the media that did go to the game is like, wow, North Carolina's defense, man, they're playing way above their heads. They're playing above expectations. Tamari Fox, Tamon Fox, like this is a really good group. And I'm sort of telling them, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. It was Syracuse's offensive line and it was Syracuse's offense down two running backs. Like, let's break for a little bit before we use this defensive performance as a reason to be able to, that, you know, just add even more gasoline to the hype fire that is going on in Chapel Hill around that football program right now. Sam Howell had a little bit of Trevor Lawrence to him, coming off the offseason of hype and throwing a couple picks, forcing the issue a little bit. But I thought that, you know, the Tar Heels eventually were fine. They settled in. They ran the ball a lot better in the second half, weren't relying on the pass as much. And so you could look at it and you could say, wow, North Carolina was way overrated. You could look at it and say it was about what you expected. And I don't think anybody's coming out of the game, though, feeling like they were blown away by what they saw from the Tar Heels.
I'm frustrated because there was the lock fight where I had, you know, Syracuse and 23 points, and it was 10-6 after the third quarter, and I didn't get the cover.
Yeah, but Tom, that's sort of who North Carolina is, my friend. Like, have you not forgotten that Sam Howell like crams an entire game's worth of action into fourth quarters every single week? It was the I pulled out the fourth quarter stats. It was 21-0, 120 yards to 41 yards, 8 yards per play to 2.3 yards per play. It was Bud Elliott in the 24/7 Slack was like posting this the quarter by quarter yards per play differential, and it was like you could just see it like accumulating and piling up and getting further apart and further apart, and the fourth quarter just the dam just broke.
So are you saying that we should maybe make it a cover three principle that we're gonna live bet North Carolina at the end of the third quarter every single week, whatever the spread is?
That might be a principle worth pursuing. Yes.
I guess. So let's see, what was the, I guess the second quarter score was 3-0 because North Carolina, remember, worst second quarter team in the nation at one point last year. If you want to, get in on them live bets, maybe you do it at the conclusion of the first half, but yep. I don't know. I come out of that feeling like North Carolina's about on track, at least for my expectations. All right. What else? Where else do y'all want to go?
Second quarter was the only quarter that Syracuse outgained North Carolina. So, hey, they are who they are.
We got App State narrowing out a victory against Charlotte, your beloved 49ers. I mean, Army, the only 2-0 team in the country, now has one, I think they have a combined score of 59-7 in its two wins. 79-7 in its two wins against UL Monroe and Middle Tennessee. There was just a total bat you know what game going on between UTSA and Texas State. Campbell nearly won against Georgia Southern, and Georgia Southern was down 33 players because of COVID suspension and other coaches' discretion related reasons. What stands out to y'all?
33 is a lot of players. That's what stands out to me. Like, I don't know what the we went over the conference protocols earlier this week on the show, and it's like, I feel like if you're out 33 players, how could you meet the requirements?
That might include walk-ons and stuff. And who knows? I just wanted to kind of draw your attention. I know it's an FBS versus FCS game, but I've been kind of whispering about Pitt. I've just been whispering about them. I'm gonna start to talk a little louder about them. They just beat Austin Peay 55-0. Austin Peay's got a game under their belt. Austin Peay is not a terrible FCS team. Pitt beat them 55-0.
Went to 10-minute quarters. 10-minute
quarters
in the
second half.
Beat them so fast.
I mean, I think Pitt's going to be good.
Chip, what about your South Florida Bulls?
I was not encouraged by the fact that they weren't able to score more against the Citadel, but, you know.
The Citadel is defensive.
Like, because what? So they had the one touchdown on the bungled punt. So I kind of take that off the board, at least in terms of what I was expecting from that group. And so, yeah, you know, not the most efficient offensive performance from the Bulls, but I take it back to, we know how Clemson inspired this staff is. Jeff Scott's got former Clemson players. He's got former Clemson assistants, and Clemson plays the Citadel like what, once every 2 years, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was absolutely built in to have anything other than a dominant win in this game would have been a massive disappointment. So they came out, you know, they took their chop blocks, and they were able to go home with a victory as one of 20 games to take place here on this week two Saturday.
Hey, rank these three teams in order: Duke, Miami, Florida State.
Miami, Florida State, Duke.
Yeah.
Okay. What would be the Miami Florida State line?
4.5
Sad. Hold on. I came out of Miami encouraged. Miami 31-14 win against UAB. That is a so UAB's defensive front. I was looking at Miami's schedule. I think that you get a better defensive front, obviously, out of Clemson. I think you get a better defensive front out of Pitt, and I think you get a better defensive front out of Florida State. But like next week, Miami's going to play Louisville. I think UAB might have a better defensive front than Louisville does. So when you rack up more than 334 rushing yards, running at an up tempo with Derek King as a rushing threat, with Cameron Harris, with like they even went two or three deep in that running back rotation. If that's sort of the heart of that new Miami offense, like it's fine if they don't. I mean, Derek King in any passing play of consequence is not looking to anybody else but Brevin Jordan, it seems.
No.
Like if he's not open, then I don't know if anything's going to happen there. But even with that up-tempo, rush-heavy attack, I still think that Miami is a very, very solid offense.
See, that's my thing, though, with that matchup, because I feel like Florida State's defensive line can limit Miami's run game. And based on, you know, what we saw in that opener for Miami, if you take away their run, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in them being able to do a whole lot of anything offensively. So that's why I would say 4.5
So if Duke played Florida State tomorrow, you would pick Florida State to win that game.
Yeah. Not like super excited, but I would pick them to win it. Like I don't like Duke. Chase Bryce played well, or at least better than I expected it to, but it's not like Duke was doing anything out there that was making me think there's, you know, oh, wait, no, this is a team that might, you know, go 4 or 5 wins in the ACC this year. I still think they're like a 2-8 team in conference.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. They're at least like, they at least kind of know who they are.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, they executed. They've got a pretty good defensive front, which we talked about. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to think about Duke. I mean, they're certainly better than I thought they were. And whether that means they're no better from a win perspective, I don't know. Maybe they're not, but they're a better team than I thought they were. So I'm kind of intrigued. I also think that Louisville is I think I can keep my cape on for Scott Satterfield because I think they're going to be really good again. I'm not, you know, Western Kentucky is not a juggernaut, but they're a good Group of Five team. They play good defense, and Louisville just gashed them. 35-21, and two of Western Kentucky's touchdowns came off turnovers where they got the ball inside like the 5-yard line. So I think Louisville is a really good team too.
Could be. I think Louisville games will still definitely be one of some of the funner games in the ACC on a weekly basis, that's for sure.
Duke and Florida State scheduled to play December 5th in Durham.
That could be for everything.
See, by then, I could see Florida State potentially being a pretty good team. I think they probably will be a pretty good team. Like at that point, I'm probably taking Florida State.
But Duke has never beaten Florida State. Duke has never beaten Florida State. 18-0 series goes back to 1992. Let me just throw it on here right now. Duke is going to take down Florida State in Durham on December 5th.
You're going to call your December shot right now?
So I'm calling after our first real Power 5 weekend, I'm calling Billy Napier to South Carolina. Chip's calling Duke finally beating Florida State. December Barton, give us something crazy that's going to happen.
Clemson will be in the playoffs.
Whoa.
So, I mean, I'm just saying that if all of the trends that we have seen about this Florida State team, like if just changing the head coach is not going to reverse what we've seen before, what's the motivation factor at the end of a disappointing COVID-impacted season when you show up to Durham, North Carolina for the final game of the year? Coach Cut will have them boys ready.
I don't know. At that point, Mike Norvell will they will have busted the portable concrete with the sledgehammer several times, and surely that's enough to galvanize the team to turn it around. So I don't know.
We'll see. He is Tom Fornelli. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back with you on Monday afternoon. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Shout out to Lane.
Yes, sir.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.